Mind program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Welcome to the radio show today, folks. We have visiting with us here at Jill the Blue Ridge Vineyard in Marshall, North Carolina, Andy Hale, who's the Educational Director of Metro Wines and the Asheville School of Wine in Asheville, North Carolina. Andy, welcome to the Mountain Grapevine.
Thanks so much, Chuck. Excited to be here.
Andy, I was looking at your website for Metro Wines and Asheville School of Wine, and I see that you came from someplace else other than the Asheville area. Tell us about yourself. Where'd you come from, and how did you get here?
Well, I'm actually originally a native North Carolinian. I grew up near Winston-Salem, North Carolina, but I moved down to Charleston, South Carolina, and I helped open up the Sanctuary Hotel out at Kiawah Island and was a server for a while, and then they asked if I wanted to take a couple of sommelier exams, and I said, sure, why not? And so I did that for a little while, did the sommelier thing, working in a couple of the restaurants down there. Then I met my wife when she was a hostess at the restaurant that I worked at. She got a real job at the bank and started working 9 to 5 hours, so we moved up to Asheville, and I got a job in the daylight to keep me
in the daylight.
Exactly.
Okay.
Not coming home at 2 or 3 in the morning after a late dinner shift.
Okay, so what are you doing now?
So now we're working with Metro Wines, help people pair wines with their dinners, with whatever they're making. We teach classes. We have tons and tons of fun events. We actually teach Asheville's only blind tasting class. Maybe the world's only blind tasting class that's open to the public. Yeah, we have a really good time out at Metro.
So how many people work at Metro?
There's probably 5 or 6 total, including the owners, John and Gina. But
John and Gina have a last name?
Yes, John Kerr and Gina Trippi.
Okay. So how did they get started in this business?
They actually moved down from D.C. maybe about 5 years ago or so. Gina was an attorney. John worked with banking industry and the government. They both have had sort of a lifelong passion for wine. John actually grew up in Napa Valley. They make pretty good wine out there, apparently. So they've had a lifelong passion for that, and this was kind of a dream of theirs that they finally sort of, you know, got to realize and, you know, quote-unquote retirement now.
Oh, yes. Oh, I understand the retirement. I've tried 3 times now. I'm still not successful.
I think they're about the same way.
Oh, but your passion drives you to get up in the morning and get things going, so it's a good thing.
Yeah, most definitely.
It's a good thing. Well, tell me a little bit about the shop. If I were walking in front of your shop, what would I see?
You will see lots and lots of wine. We have stuffed that small shop full of mini bottles of wine as we can possibly fit in there. That is usually the first thing that most people say is, wow, you have a lot of wine here.
Roughly how many different bottles?
Oh my goodness, that's really hard to guess. I would say 500 maybe different bottles of wine.
So how many square feet of retail space do you have?
Oh my goodness, it's not huge. It's actually a pretty small shop. I would say probably, maybe 1,200 square feet roughly. We have basically every inch of that place covered in bottles of wine, except for the back area, which we save for our events, classes.
Sure.
For people to come and sit, enjoy a glass of wine.
Well, most wine shops have sort of a niche in the marketplace, you know, low-cost wines or high-cost wines. How do you see Metro in that scheme of things?
We definitely try to straddle both the low-cost wines and the high-cost wines. We have, you know, lots of customers that come in, and, you know, for them, buying a $100, $200 bottle of wine is not a big deal, and that's terrific. We try to keep them happy. People like myself, that for me, a splurge is about $20 or $15, and most nightly wines, you know, $10, $12, or even under. Try to carry quite a few wines in that price range as well. I'd say that if there's one area that we specialize in at Metro Wines, we are really, really proud of our Italian selection. Although we carry wines from all over the world. I mean, Austria, Germany, California, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, Spain, and some of the classics. We've got Bordeaux, we've got Burgundy, and some of the new areas that are emerging as well that a lot of people don't know about.
I know from my experience in working on cruise ships around the world and also doing a lot of lecturing on wines over the years that Italian wines have a unique feature that most other countries don't have, and they put labels on the bottle that sort of discriminate their better wines from the lesser wines. I know they have DOCG wines are the top of the line and so forth. Explain to us some of the other types of labels they have on their wines.
Sure. DOCG, of course, are the most famous grapes and from the most famous areas. The DOCs are fantastic as well. They're not quite as guaranteed quality. They can be a little bit, some are good, some are bad, but still very interesting. And of course, there's the IGT designation, mm-hmm. which is, and pardon my horrible Italian pronunciation, Indicazione Geografica Tipica, yep. which basically gives them a little bit more, the winemaker a little bit more leeway to experiment with some more international grapes. You can take your traditional Sangiovese from Tuscany, and then you can add a bunch of Merlot or Cabernet or Syrah to it and kind of see what happens. It allows the winemaker to be a little bit more creative.
I know I read some articles recently about the Italian winemakers now starting to go with non-labeled wines that way. I forget what the category they call it, but it's not IGT, it's not DOC, but it has a designation, and it gives them much more flexibility to create their very interesting wines.
Interesting.
Have you run into that?
I've seen a few of them. Yeah, a lot of them coming in from the south of Italy. They're starting to try to get some of the more, less known areas out there. You're seeing some really, really interesting grapes a lot of us haven't seen before coming out of the south, from Sicily, from Sardinia, from the Amalfi Coast and Campania, all these interesting places. It seems like every day we'll try a new grape that we've never heard of before, and they just end up, they're so much fun. I'd say that's probably the thing that I get most interested in my career.
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time in Italy over the years. In a previous life, I used to have representatives there in Milano, and so I was always traveling throughout Italy and enjoying all the different kind of wines. You couldn't even find in most stores, and none of them here.
Oh, yeah.
But there's some fabulous wines over there you just can't even find over here at all. So it's a great place for wines. I think Italy had something like 30,000 wineries in the country.
I'm sure.
It's just crazy. But some absolutely phenomenal wines if you take the time to go tasting and checking them out.
I've also heard there's somewhere in the range of like 2,000 different grape varietals, individual grape varietals that they have in the country. And that's just the ones that are recognized by the Italian government. And I've heard it's probably more like twice that.
Yeah, well, in the industry proper, I know from the research I've done, there's 300 varieties of muscadines and scuppernongs.
I've
got a lot here, but there's only one cold hardy one, which is the one we grow here. And I also found out that there are 15,000 varieties of grapes in the world.
Isn't that amazing?
Most people can't name 10. But to have somebody who says they understand Italian wines is going a piece if you've got that many different grapes in the country. That's just outrageous. Of course, each one of those wineries, of course, produce, 3, 4, 5, some of them maybe 10 or 12 different kinds of wines at one winery. So it's hopeless to become an expert.
Absolutely. And it's constantly changing. But that's kind of the fun of it. We'll never run out of grape varietals, and wine will never get boring.
Yep, exactly. I love the different varieties. And sometimes, it's been my experience, maybe you can share with yours on this point, but I've noticed over the years, if I look for a really good wine, and I try to go for the DOCG,
sure,
I've never really had a bad one.
Sure.
If I go down to the DOC, there's about a 90% chance I'm going to get a good one, but there's still that 10% chance it's not going to be so good. And the IGT, that's a real crapshoot. I would say, in my experience at least, maybe, I don't know, 40-50% of them are pretty good, and the others are less than pretty good. What do you find on that scale?
Oh, DOCG wines, of course, are terrific. I mean, they're amazing. There's actually a government tasting panel in Italy where you have to taste the wine and make sure that it's the quality, which, how do you get that job, by the way? That sounds like that's a pretty good gig. But they absolutely are phenomenal. But since they're so famous, you end up paying a bit more for them.
Of course.
I find that I've had a lot of success personally with going for some of these off-the-beaten-path wines, trying some of these grapes with goofy-sounding names like Gallioppo from Calabria and weird stuff like that, that are more affordable. And I feel like you get a little more for your money sometimes if you sort of take a risk and try an unusual varietal.
I remember visiting over there a few years ago. I went to the headquarters of Cervim.
Oh.
Cervim is a special organization in Europe, started there, but headquartered in Italy, north of the Tuscany area. But the Cervim is a special category of winemakers they call heroic winemaking and grape growing. And it's a special label you can put on your bottles if you have a vineyard that's above 1,600 feet in elevation. So it means more cold, hardy stuff.
Sure.
And if the steepness is greater than 30 degrees. So if you have one or both of those, you're allowed to put this on your labels. And this gives you something like a 5 to 10% premium on the price.
Oh, okay.
Because it's considered heroic viticulture to have to work in all these difficult conditions of making the grapes and the wine. So
that would definitely include Western North Carolina, wouldn't it, Devia?
Well, let me tell you, we're here. Actually, USA is represented in Cervim by the organization up at Appalachian State University. They have a guy up there.
It's my alma mater.
He's actually been pretty insistent on trying to get members from the United States, but it hasn't caught on over here so well. But a lot of European countries have it. Greece has a lot of them. Of course, Italy, if you've seen those places where they have these terraces, it's like almost like 80 degrees straight up.
Crazy.
It's just astounding. But they're allowed to get a premium price for their wines because they're grown under these difficult conditions. So just another little fun thing to be playing with.
Sure.
Well, Andy, tell me just a little bit about what somebody might expect if they were come in there and say, hey, I don't know anything about wine. What's your biggest nightmare of somebody walking in the front door looking for wine?
I don't think you have to know a lot about wine to come in our shop. You never need to feel intimidated. It's not something we'll ever shame you. Like, oh, you can't even name all the Grand Cru Bordeaux. I always tell people wine is, you know, just beer made out of grapes. It doesn't have to be anything really snobby or complicated.
Beer made out of grapes? That's great.
But I think you can learn a little bit more about wine. You can have a bit more fun with it. So you never have to be worried about that. I'd say the biggest nightmare that I have is when someone says, I had a wine and it had a red label and there were words on it. Can you help me find it? And it's just, my memory doesn't work that well. It's there. If you have a terrific bottle of wine that you enjoy and you want to get it again, I highly recommend snapping a picture of the label with your phone. That makes my life so easy.
Yeah, I've talked to some other wine shop owners, and they'll say they have this guy walking around the door. I got to get a bottle of wine. The wife told me to stop and get a bottle of wine. He says, well, what are you having for dinner? Well, I don't know. Maybe it's pork. I'm not sure. Maybe it's steak. I can't remember. And you're just at a total loss.
Oh.
You cannot help people unless you know what the food pairing thing is supposed to be going with.
I have a couple of wines that I actually keep around that are kind of, I almost think of them as almost universal pairings. They'll go with just about anything. I've definitely experienced that. I'm bringing this to a dinner party. What are they having? I don't know. Are you going to serve it with the food or do you want to drink it on its own? I'm not sure. Okay. We've got a wine that'll work well with basically all of those things.
Yep.
But yeah, I'd say my favorite part about my job, being a former restaurant sommelier, I love pairing wines with people's dinners. And it's a lot of fun that I get to still do that. People come in. We're making spaghetti bolognese. What do you recommend with that? And I love being able to pair wines with people's dinner.
Now, Andy, when you were acting as a sommelier, tell me you didn't show up in a restaurant with that chain and a little taste vine around your neck.
The taste vine.
No. Tell me you didn't do that.
They discouraged. Most customers didn't like the idea of me drinking their wine for them to make sure that it was good, but we were not encouraged to bring the taste vine.
I've got some awful stories about that I can tell you offline, but we won't go there right now. Folks, we've been visiting here at Jewel of the Blue Ridge Vineyard with Andy Hale, who is the Educational Director of Metro Wines and the Asheville School of Wine in Asheville, North Carolina. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Freddie Fubar's Frog Jumping Training Class. Many of our listeners will remember the time when we were kids and watched the frog jumping contest at the Madison County Fair. You can still feel the pride as each contestant carefully places their frog in the circle and then encourage the frog to jump out of the 6-foot diameter circle. Freddie Fubar was our county champion for 5 years in a row. Now he's turned his past experience into a business. Freddie offers classes in frog jumping training for kids and their parents. His first task is to teach folks how to catch their best frogs. It's best if you have a large pond near your home so you can watch the frogs grow from week to week during the summer. Once you've identified your frog-jumping prospects, he shows you how to carefully wade out into the pond armed with his frog-catching net he invented. Folks who sign up for his frog-jumping training class will get a frog-catching net to keep for their very own. Once you catch a few prospective jumping frogs, you have to see which one has the best chance to jump the farthest. Freddy places a stool near the bank of the pond and places each frog on the seat. The frog then leaps towards the pond. He catches it with his frog-catching net just before it hits the water. He tests about 5 or 6 frogs to make this leap before deciding which one jumped the longest distance. He takes his best jumper to the county fair to compete. Freddy has several techniques to encourage the frogs to jump once they have been put inside the jumping contest circle. Yelling just doesn't work. He has a long turkey feather he uses to tickle their behind to get them to jump. If that doesn't work, Freddy stomps his foot loudly behind the frog and scares the frog into jumping. That technique always works. Freddy, however, warns you to be careful. Bernie Blake tried that technique last year and totally squashed his frog when he miscalculated where he was stomping. Frog guts got squirted on several spectators sitting nearby. Freddy Fubar's frog jumping training class is another small business invented in the good old US of A here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can sign up for Freddy Fubar's frog jumping training class today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been having a visit today at the Julie Bridge Vineyard with Andy Hale, who's the Educational Director of Metro Wines and also the Asheville School of Wine in Asheville, North Carolina. Andy, just before the break, we were talking about some things and having a good time laughing about various kinds of wines and so many and so forth, but our radio audience probably doesn't understand how a wine shop goes about selecting the wines that you sell.
It's a complicated process. We usually sit down as a group. We'll taste, 20 or 30 wines in a day that some of vendors will bring in. We'll sort of rate them on quality, what we think, how good they are versus price. Yeah, if it's a $15 wine with a $20 price tag, probably not something that we want to carry in the shop. But if it's a $20 wine with a $15 or a $10 price tag, that's amazing. That's one that we would really push. We also really consider what our customers are asking for. If we have a lot of people that are coming in asking for wines from Eastern Europe, I've had a lot of those recently, a lot of people coming back from former Yugoslavia from vacation and saying, hey, can you get us Plavik Mali? So we'll start bringing some of those wines in.
If you were to tell us about your customer profile, what would that look like?
I'd say the majority of them lean a bit European in their wine tastes, although I have a huge number of people that prefer California wines, Washington State. Oregon Pinot Noirs are very, very popular right now. But I think most of Asheville really likes French wines, Italian wines, Spanish wines. And of course, we're so close to the Grove Park Inn, we get lots of people coming up from Charlotte. Do you have this big brand name California cab? And so we can carry those as well.
It's a funny thing you mentioned Oregon. I know the Willamette Valley out there produces some of the best Pinot Noirs in the world, in my opinion.
Most definitely.
The weather and the soil there is absolutely ideal for growing Pinot Noir.
I agree.
Okay, so you've got your typical customer profile in terms of their taste. What about the age brackets? Young people, old people, what?
It's kind of fun. We actually have a nice mix. We have a lot of early 20s to 30s and a lot of 50s and up. I'd say the majority are probably in the 50 to 70 age bracket. Although more and more, as Asheville is getting to be more and more of a food-centered city, more of the young people are coming in and getting into wine. So 30s to 40s, I'd say, were probably growing the most in the past 2 or 3 years.
Well, I know that Americans, for the most part, this is awful to say, but I'll say it on radio anyway. Most Americans just don't have a taste bud in their mouth. They just don't. They don't have any clue on how to evaluate a wine. So if somebody comes into your shop looking for that kind of help, how do you help them?
I try to gently nudge them towards the wines that I think are responsibly made without chemical products, dyes and things. The unfortunate truth is wine is becoming more and more of a manipulated product over the years. And to us, it's important to get wines that are made out of grapes, essentially. We get a lot of people coming and asking for, say, a grocery store brand wine, and we'll absolutely get that for them. You know, there's never any snobbery, there's never any Pothic Red, we're not going to carry that, or whatever. I like to gently coerce people into trying some new wines that might be more traditionally made.
Oh, coercion. I love that word. That's, that's a good...
Try this out. That's see what way... you think.
Yeah, that's a great way to get them started. Do you carry any fruit wines?
We carry a few meads, but mostly...
Blends?
Yes.
Fruit blends.
Blended with some fruit. Some meads with blueberry and ginger, that sort of thing. All locally made, but just grape wines.
Sure. So, muscadines? That's a grape.
Absolutely. I don't currently have a muscadine wine in the shop, but I have had a few that I've enjoyed.
I'm on the board of directors of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association.
Sure.
And so, I get pretty close, frequent contact with all 147 muscadine growers and wineries we have in the state right now. And I have to tell you, there's a huge, it's like other wines, there's a huge variation in the quality of the wines.
Most definitely.
And there are a few that I have found absolutely outstanding, including one winemaker that does dry muscadine wines. That is fabulous.
I had one recently from Addison Family Farms and really, really enjoyed them. Terrific bottle of wine. A different flavor profile, most definitely. It's something that I found very intriguing.
Well, I know Jeff Frisbee is a friend of mine. He's the owner and winemaker over there at Addison Family Farms. He had some really nice gold medal wines that he won last year, and I think again this year in the Asheville Wine and Food Festival where we provide the wine judges. So it was sort of fun.
Terrific.
Good. All right, so what kind of help would you get somebody on training them how to taste wine? Do you have something like that?
As a matter of fact, I do, but it's kind of a sneaky way to train your palate to taste wine. We do a blind tasting league once a month.
Wait a minute. A blind tasting league?
Correct. No blindfolds or anything like that. It's actually a sommelier art where you taste wines without knowing what the grape is. You just come in. There are four glasses of wine in front of you when you sit down. Two whites, two reds. We actually had one last night. We taste the wine and try to guess the grape varietal and where it's from in the world. Now, the most important thing, in my opinion, about this is not whether or not you get the grape right. That's really, really hard. The most important thing is learning to describe the flavors that you're tasting. So we'll sit there, we'll sniff it, and we'll go, oh, raspberry, blueberry, and then we'll end up with some really, really crazy descriptions. Oh, it smells like my grandmother's furniture or something like that, and it gets a little bit out there. But we have a really good time doing it. It's a very laid-back thing, and that's actually... my sommelier training, what really got me to be able to describe the flavors is when you don't know what it is and you're just desperately looking for any clue as to, is it a Merlot? Is it a Cabernet? What in the world is in front of me here? That's when you can really pick out those really subtle characteristics.
Yeah, we've found here at working with wines that it's always the vocabulary that's the killer for most people. They just don't have the vocabulary to be able to describe things. And there's also such a thing as little helpers like the wine tasting wheels.
Absolutely.
We have those once in a while when we're trying to train people, but it's really the vocabulary, and it sounds like you've got a good approach to do that, letting people develop it as they sit there, not knowing exactly what's in the glass, but just describing, what does that taste like? What it tastes like, or it smells like something. So
exactly.
Great way to develop the vocabulary. Do you have something formal? I see as the educational director of the Asheville School of Wine, what goes on there?
Well, we actually have a 6-class program right now, just an hour long lecture per class. We do this once a month, starting off with some introductory sort of hands-on learning things about wine. Decanting, when should you decant and how, what does that do? Should you start a cellar? What exactly does aging wine do? Some of the classic flavor descriptors and some hands-on practical things for tasting wine. And then we go from there country by country, region by region. We talk about the wines of France, the wines of Italy, wines of the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal, Southern Hemisphere. We kind of tackle that all in one class. And the last one we're actually doing this coming week on Thursday is Wines You Never Knew You Loved. That's my favorite. They're obscure grape varietals from obscure countries all over the world. Wines and grape varietals that most people have never had, and they absolutely need to start drinking them right now.
Tell me about these classes. How much do they cost?
They're $20 and includes a tasting of 4 different wines, about 2 ounces or 3 ounces a piece. So it ends up adding up to about basically 2 glasses of wine. You can buy tickets online at our website, www.ashevilleschoolofwine.com, or you can just call Metro Wines and let us know you're coming.
Where do we call?
It is 828-575-9525.
And what about the wine shop?
That is the wine shop. That's at Metro Wines.
And what's the hours?
The hours of our shop are 10 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock every single day of the week, except for Sunday, we're 12 to 5 on that day. So 7 days a week.
Okay, and what about the School of Wine classes? What hours do they run?
They start at 6 o'clock, and it is the third Thursday of every month currently. We're also teaching classes through the OLLI program at UNC Asheville. Those vary from semester to semester, so contact the OLLI program if you want to join us for any of those. And we have lots and lots of other little flash classes and pop-up events that we do from time to time that are kind of under the umbrella of the Asheville School of Wine.
So what about any special events that go on at your place?
Just about every single day we have something going on. We have winemakers that stop by for their wines from all over the world. We have different events and classes. We have a lot of fun, and we stay very, very busy. And we're also tasting wine every single day, all day long. There's always a bottle open at Metro Wines.
Are the tastings free, or there's a charge for the tastings?
They're almost always free. Every once in a while, if we have a really, really high-end kind of thing, and we're doing some food to go with it, sometimes there'll be a small charge. Aside from that, they're just about always free.
If somebody were to get in touch with Metro Wines, how would we go about doing that?
You can contact us at the phone number that I mentioned. You can stop by the shop in person.
Where's the shop?
It is at 169 Charlotte Street on the way to the Grove Park Inn, conveniently located just outside downtown Asheville, with parking, so it's actually kind of an added bonus there.
Ooh, extra parking. That's always good.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can also check out what's going on our Facebook page. We also have several websites. The Asheville School of Wine, of course, as I mentioned, MetroWinesAsheville.com. And if you're interested in the Blind Tasting League, there is actually its own website as well, BlindTastingLeague.com. And you can see what happened at the last event.
Well, it sounds like a lot of stuff going on around Metro Wines.
Absolutely. Yeah, we stay incredibly busy. You never know what's going to happen when you go in from one day to the next.
Do you spend time actually in the shop all day, every day, or is this just a part-time thing down there and other things taking up your time too?
I'm just about always there at the shop, helping people pick out the right bottle of wine to go with their dinner or for that special event, or just Tuesday night wine, as we like to call them. But sometimes you'll find me out and about doing wine dinner at restaurants, tastings all around town. We have lots of fun, and we're really, really busy, like I said.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be your best customer walking in and saying, okay, my wife sent me here for dinner wine, and what we're having is roast pork, and we're looking for something in a nice white wine that might go with that, a little bit of off-dry. What would you recommend?
Ooh, something a little bit off-dry. You could go for one of my favorites, a slightly off-dry Riesling, I think would match very nicely with a pork dish. That high acid. I feel like pork chops need some acid.
Just a touch.
Just a little touch to kind of cut through some of the fattiness.
Okay, Gewürztraminer, would that be a good one too?
Gewürztraminer could be terrific, especially if you're going for more of almost a spicy kind of style with your pork. If you have a lot of heat to it, something especially with a little bit of residual sugar might be just the thing to go with it.
Fantastic. Andy, we certainly appreciate your being with us on a radio show today. Hope you'll have a chance to come back in some future time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been terrific. I'd love to.
Folks, we've been having a visit today with Andy Hale, who's the Educational Director of Metro Wines and the Asheville School of Wine in Asheville, North Carolina. Again, thanks everybody for tuning in to today's show. And Andy, hope you have a good day.
Thanks so much. You too.
We'll call that a wrap for today's program, folks.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!